What is up, everybody? My name is John Sparks. I am your host for Sparks of the Paranormal. And I want to say a huge thank you to everybody out there that's been showing love and support on the Instagram, the Facebook page, all the podcasting platforms. You guys freaking rock, man. Seriously, thank you so much. And I think we're all really enjoying this journey together as we learn more about UFOs, cryptids, spirits, ghosts, demons, everything that goes bump in the night. And if you guys want to support the show, guess what? I just dropped merch. That's right. If you go to the Instagram page or you go to the Facebook page, you'll find a link there. It's going to get you some sweet, sweet paranormal swag. Maybe some dope hats, some wicked sweet t-shirts, maybe even a bandana for your paranormal pup. That's right. Grab a bandana, slap it on that pup. I want to see a picture on Instagram. With that being said, grab a seat, kids. Get ready, because it's about to get crazy on a brand new episode of Sparks of the Paranormal. Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to the podcast. Welcome back to Sparks of the Paranormal. I am your host, John Sparks. Huge thank you to everybody that listened to our last episode with Jared and Richard from Paranormal Now. Interesting to sit down and talk with a psychic, let alone two. These guys are pretty phenomenal. Gotten to be great friends with them over the last couple months. And that is a really want some good content. That is a phenomenal episode. But today, ladies and gentlemen, I've got another... there's never a bad episode, but I've got another really good episode for you. Emily Menzhaus from the host of What the Frick Live, founder of Error 44 Paranormal, director of Error 606 Paranormal Kentucky. I'm just so stoked to have her here. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Emily Menzhaus. Emily, how you doing?
Hey, thank you, John. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for having me on your show tonight. Really appreciate it.
Oh, it's my pleasure. It is absolutely my pleasure. So I want to dig right into the meat of it.
Okay.
How did you get started down the path of the paranormal? Was it an experience? Was it obsession? Were you a skeptic that's like, that's not there, I'm going to prove it's not there? How did it go down?
I'm a skeptic now a little bit to a certain degree. But how it got started in the meat of things, I grew up in a haunted house. I have seen things since probably, I think the earliest remembrance was at least first grade, so 6 years old and forward. And I lived in a very haunted house. My parents ended up selling that home. We built a home when I was in middle school. I told my parents repetitively, and my brother seen some things. I don't know if he's kind of blocked that stuff off now. He will tell you what he's seen, but he's kind of blocked things off a little bit, I think, over the years. But we saw some things, a lot of similarity. They built the home. We moved there. We kind of had some stuff happen there.
Yeah.
In the background of things, which I didn't know at the time, they had our pastor come down, pray over the house, anoint the doors and windows and stuff, and everything was good. We never had an experience in the other house. And then when I was 18, my senior year in high school, my dad finally says, my dad, not my mom, my dad's the one, he ended up being the weak link, but he's a Pisces too, just like me. So I think he has a gift and a calling on his life, and he has seen spiritual stuff, but he's manly and he's a veteran, and like, yeah, you don't talk about those things. So finally my senior year, he was like, Emily, what you saw and the things that happened, especially on Laurel Avenue, happened. Yeah. And that was one of the reasons why we sold the house. We put that house up for sale, or they put the house up for sale. I was in seventh grade, or going into seventh grade. We sold that house within the first hour. It was up for sale. Like, sold it. It was crazy. Like, I remember, like, my mom we put it up for sale, and we put it up for sale in the newspaper back then. So the newspaper went out that morning, and the first hour after the newspaper went out, my mom got a phone call. She's like, oh, we gotta go, they're gonna come over. So I remember, like, oh my goodness, here we go. Mom was like, make your beds. So we leave and we're driving around. I remember they took us and got us McDonald's and stuff. We're driving around. The realtor finally called my mom and like, okay, they wanted to give you this offer, which is like, wasn't much off the asking price. So they accepted it. So we sold the house within the hour of it coming out in the newspaper.
That's awesome.
First week. And so 18 years old, my dad finally tells me everything that happened. I didn't see that much of anything there at that new home, actually, honestly. And then I moved and progressively started seeing more things spiritually speaking in the church. So, because I was raised in a musically talented family. Everybody sang and played instruments. We traveled a little bit. They had some tapes and things that came out, the Men's House Family Singers. And we got away from church. We got back into church there through middle school. And things, and I started seeing stuff within the church. Spiritual warfare, man, it's like the hottest place you want to be is at the altar, believe me. you want to see the struggle between good and evil is at an altar. And I ended up being an altar care minister, got licensed for that, and then I started before I was even 18. And then I went into Bible college, and I was seeing things. I saw a lot of more spiritual things happen in the church that kind of like, if I told you the stories, I don't know if I should or not. We'll go into that in a moment. Sorry, that's my Bluetooth. Battery is low. It came from Japan. Battery is low. Please recharge. Sorry. So I saw things through the church, and then I started praying against it. Like, it was too much for me to handle. And I prayed against it. Prayed it. I was like, God, because there's a gift of discernment. And sometimes that's discernment is seeing somebody and looking into their eyes and like talking to them. Or that's discernment of seeing something spiritually crafted or come about in oppressions and possessions. And I had also ended up helping with about seven or eight cases of demonic possessions in my early 20s. So I prayed against it, couldn't handle it. And then in my early 30s, just like 7 years ago, I started praying, okay, God, I think I'm more mature now. Bring it into me gradually. So, so I have started seeing things again. And then I started understanding some stuff. Like, I started seeing things off images a lot, or videos. I'll be watching somebody on a video and I'll see something go past them or tap on their shoulder or something. Like, I don't physically see it, but it's really hard to explain. And which,
like, your third eye.
Yes. And it's real, but not like it's so hard to explain. And then, which I've learned just this past summer, y'all, this past summer, because I didn't know what this was done. I've been doing this for the last 5 or 6 years, remote viewing. So, you know, that's how it is. That's how it came about. And yes, I do paranormal. I did them, started doing them back in the 1990s.
Wow.
So RCA.
Okay. Yeah. Oh yeah. Man. I've got one of those somewhere.
How we didn't get vaulted, I don't know, because listen,
direct to VHS.
This saved me one time, actually. I remember we stripped wires and hooked it up to a battery on a freaking Jeep.
Oh, that's safe. That is so safe.
Wrapped them around there. Started the Jeep up to extension. I'm telling you, it worked. It worked. I don't know.
It's horrifying.
Well, I got lost in the woods with this dude that said he was familiar with the woods. He's the one that panicked. I've never told this story. So he had a four-wheeler. We're like, and I'm like, we've passed this tree 3 times. How do you know? And I was like, because it has this big, huge bump that comes off of it. So,
well, and if you're from a country area, you don't necessarily go off of mileage. You go off of, hey, that tree with a bump on it.
Right. But I'm a city girl. Like, I'm a city girl because I played basketball, and this area was out at Cave Run Lake. Was the area that we're at, and What is that? Is it Cape Fear, the movie? Cape Fear?
Cape Fear?
Cape Fear. Yes. That's at Cave Run Lake here in Kentucky. Yep. So if you ever watch that movie, that's where I was at. So he had a cabin there, and I trusted him because he grew up there and he knew everywhere we were going. I'm like, okay, I'm kind of good with directions. So he's freaking out. We can't find anything. My battery's at 10%. Like, this is a horror movie. And, I mean, the dude, like, freaks out. And so I start looking in his little satchels there, and I find this charger that was happened to be for my Android. And but we had no way to plug it in. I stripped the wires.
Oh, Lord.
I wrapped it around the battery of it. I turned the four-wheeler on, and we had to wait about 30 minutes or so. I got a 10% battery after 30 minutes to call 911. So my early experience in paranormal saved my life. And we were on the news and everything. Like, they had to send out, like, search parties for us.
Wow. That's crazy. That is crazy. So it sounds like your last name should actually be MacGyver instead of Men's House. So
I wonder if he's Pisces.
So how did the show What the Frick Live come across? How did you get to that point?
Okay. Fast forward. I was doing paranormal investigations before I knew it was paranormal investigations, before it was on TV, before any of that. So then in about 2004 or so, I ended up being a part of a team called Kentucky Paranormal Investigators. Mm-hmm. I had my first TV experience with them, and it's called My Haunting or something like that. I can't even remember. It was so long, old school ago. I think it was one of the very first TV shows, not from UK. It's here in the States.
Was it A Haunting? Was that what it was?
That might be it.
The one that was on Discovery Channel?
I can't remember. I was just in the background.
No, hey, everybody.
The house is the super
She's
haunted.
Standing there by that post.
Yeah, they got me twice. They got me twice. It was like, I was a creeper. Was it photo
Found
bombing?
The haunting. Found the haunting. It's that chick back there by the post.
They didn't interview me. I was like, and I remember the guy that was over it too. That this, they don't exist anymore, and it's kind of sad because guys are a lot more drama than females. I'll tell you that. That was my first experience of being in a professional team that had fallout because the guys, and it had been around for about 8 or 9 years. I came in and I was with them for 3 years, and it was like, it was the worst drop. Like, one of the guys ended up buying, like, the copyrights that stuff off, like, underneath the founder. It was, like, crazy. And I was like, I don't know about this. And so I ended up spinning off myself, ended up being the paranormal residential investigator for the Seton Manor here in Ashland, Kentucky. We had events, we sold out, ended up being on like a TV show called The Paranormal Journeys. Mm-hmm. We were on Roku. Mm-hmm. And at that time, Roku was up and coming. It wasn't that big as it is now. We were one of the top 10 downloads on Roku for 2 years in a row. Uh-oh. I was 2 years. Well, I was on it for 3 seasons. I was on there for 3, 4, and 5.
Yeah.
And part of 5, not all of 5. 3 and 4 were the top 10 downloads that I know of. That show's no longer existing. I don't know if it's still on Roku or not, but if it is, passcode, whatever it is, it's G H, capital H, the number 0, the number 5, and the capital T, ghost. I don't know. I haven't talked to Neil, the producer, since 2018. So I ended up quitting that show. And then from then on, I started some teams. Like, the bigger the crowd, it's kind of harder to get everybody together.
Yeah.
And so I spinned it off a little bit and had, because my best friend, Tiffany Moore, They called us Frickin' Frack. We worked at the same place. There's Frickin' Frack.
That's
so
awesome.
Frickin' Frack Paranormal came about, and we were investigating things on our own for a little bit, and then we started doing this stuff on Friday night just for kicks and giggles. It was called Frickin' Frack Friday. And the third guest I had on was Steve DeShavi.
Oh, wow.
Guest I had on was second guest I had on was Horsefly Chronicles, Phil Syracuse, Horsefly Chronicles, which had a huge book out, and that was like really hot at that time. And I was like, dude, he messaged me. I was telling Tiffany, and Tiffany totally different background, like she don't know. Because who's Steve DeShavi?
What? Okay.
So she's totally, I'm like, don't worry about it. We're gonna have a good time. And
it's like Bill Murray in the paranormal community. You just know.
So it went from Frickin' Frack Friday, and then I ended up starting a team and a network, and I wanted to keep Frickin' Frack, so I spent it off to What the Frick Live on Friday nights. And Tiffany is still part of it. She's not on the show, obviously. I wish she was, but she wasn't. She had some hard times and everything, and she kind of backed out of it and everything. But I have a co-host, Will Martinez. He has a show called Dark Fringe Radio, also a podcast. And he has been my co-host now for a year and a half. So we were on Paranormal Warehouse every Friday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, which that's still the same time. And Paranormal Warehouse did a decision, or made a decision, without us being aware of what's going on. They kind of, like, it came out of the blue. They got rid of all interview shows on the network. So now we're on PUN, Paranormal United Network, which is getting ready to go to Roku. And so I'm excited
about that.
Yeah. And that's on Facebook. And then I have been streaming live to my YouTube, which I only have like 200 followers or so on there. I've never really advertised YouTube.
Yeah.
But it's youtube.com/EmilyMinsHouse on that. So I'm streaming to YouTube and the PUN.
Wow.
No pun intended. It's just
That one hurt a little bit. That one hurt a little bit.
I caught you
next time. No, you're good. I like hearing. I like listening. This is all good. Soaking in information is my favorite thing to do.
I'm to the point where I'm very rarely on this side, so
yeah. You're good.
That's what I'm saying.
You're good. So going back to childhood in that haunted house. Can you take me back to some of the experiences that you had there, and your feelings around it, your love, understanding, things like that?
Okay. In that house, my brother's bedroom and my bedroom, I was on the very end of the hallway. Okay. Then he was on the beginning of the hallway, and he just had like 3 or 4 steps, and it opens up and it goes into the dining room and living room. It's all together. Okay. And then right there is the steps that go up. I'm talking with my hands like people can see me.
You're good.
It's like, okay, it's upstairs, okay? And then that's my parents. The whole upstairs is the master suite. And then we had the computer room. It got so bad, let me tell you, they took our mattresses from our bedrooms and moved them upstairs into the computer room, which was all open. It was all open. So I would tell you, probably the whole time I lived in that house, from being born, well, I don't know if as an infant or anything, but as I got older, what I can remember, I probably slept in that room 4, 5, 6 times. Like, oh, they would, I remember mom said, I will give you $10 to sleep in your bedroom. I remember they bought a one of those tents, which was big back in the 80s, over your bed to sleep in that bedroom. And I they had to take the tent back. Like, I couldn't do it. One incident that happened, this is still kind of a little creepy to me too, especially after my dad told us it was the truth. I'll tell you about sleepwalking too here in a moment. Anyway, I would, if we were downstairs, honestly, I would go act like I'm going to sleep. My brother would act like he was going to sleep, sneaking back into my brother's bedroom. My parents told me that I would climb over the crib even when I couldn't even walk, just crawling. Would crawl over the crib and crawl into their bedroom. And my dad said he would roll over and he could feel somebody looking at him. It's me, like, as a baby, looking at him. So there was something about my bedroom, which will get sinister in a little bit, I guess. Ooh. But, yeah. I like that name, Sinister.
Yeah. Great series of films. But anyway,
I haven't used that word in a long time. So, so one incident, my dad was really big into boxing back in those days. And out in the living room, we had a coffee table. And on that coffee table, my mom had like a country wooden checkerboard. Mm-hmm. In the middle of the checkerboard was a porcelain bowl. And it had blue checkers and red checkers in there, but there were wooden. They were cut out in hearts. Like primitive is what we'd call it now. So, my dad a lot of times would have a beer or something out there in the living room, watch some boxing, and he would scoop those up and he would just sit back in the, and like try to shoot them into that porcelain bowl.
Oh yeah.
So, I was in my brother's room. I was on the carpet there. I had my blanket and a pillow, and we kept hearing this click, like something hitting, click, like it sounded like those checkers were being hit. I was probably second grade, my brother's first grade. I might have been third, but either way, second or third, first and second. So I remember, I'm like, Zach, that's my brother's name, do you hear that? And he goes, yeah, it's Dad. I'm like, there's no lights on. Why is Dad doing it in dark?
Wow.
So I'll never forget this. He's like, I don't know. Why is he doing it in the dark? I said, I don't know. Like, we sat there for a second. He's like, we should go check. And we, like, sat there for a moment, like, no, let's not, you know. It's just Dad. I'm like, we got up. So we get up, and I remember taking my little hand around that corner there because the light switch was there. This is my hand, my left hand. I'm right-handed. And I remember flicking that light switch on for the overhead light, and we looked around, and Dad wasn't there, but the checkers were everywhere. Wow. And we took off running right up there, up the steps, running, waking them up. Dad was away, like, they were like coming out of like, what's going on, you know? So then my dad thought it was a story. He sat there, talked to us for a second, and then he went downstairs just to check, and he came back up and said nothing was out of place, everything is fine, we were dreaming, all this stuff. When I was 18,
nice cover up, pops.
Yeah. When I was 18, he said he went down there, he really thought someone was in the house, and he went through everywhere to find, even in the basement, everywhere, to see where someone was. And it said that was like the first time that he was really truly scared of being in that house, like, because you always felt like somebody was watching you and everything, but and you would hear things, and my bedroom door personally would slam shut and things, and you would make excuses that's the wind, but here we are, two young kids. And he said that was the first time that he was like, he felt his heart up into his throat.
Wow.
So yeah, and my brother will say he remembers that, but he will say, I don't know if it's him I don't know if it's him blocking it out or whatever, but he would say he can't remember the checkers, but he was a little bit shorter than me. I'm up, you know, I'm taller, I'm 16 months older than him, and I have flicked the light and I'm looking, so I don't know. He might not have seen the checkers, but they were everywhere. And my dad would say it, they were everywhere.
Wow. That's so crazy.
Yeah, it was poltergeist activity there. And another time too, in sixth grade, when I was in sixth grade, and this is when they decided to move. I was in my bedroom, my brother was in his room, and I'm getting older, so we're not trying to sleep in the same rooms or anything like that.
Of course.
We have a dog. She's a standard poodle. She actually was flown in from Spain. My parents were high maintenance.
Wow.
Her name was Nui de Longchamp, which meant Night of the Races. I remember picking her up. We picked her up at the airport. So she was flown in from Spain. And my dog, that she was super amazing dog, but she would never come back to my bedroom. Like, I would have to force her to come back. If I was in there just doing homework, I didn't sleep in there that much. But if I was in there just doing homework, watching TV or whatever, I mean, she would turn into a different dog too back in there. She would growl. She would hit like, and I didn't think of it as her looking at something at that time.
Mm-hmm.
But she would over, especially over my closet area, you know, she would.
Protective mode.
Yeah. So she changed into a different dog back then. But I remember she would pace a lot, which before we started the show, you heard my dog pacing because I said his name. But she would, you would hear her even on the carpet, like her feet moving and stuff. So I remember being in my bedroom one evening. My brother wasn't home. I think he was spending the night with one of his friends. And my parents were upstairs watching a movie, and I was in my bedroom just doing homework. It wasn't sleep time or anything. It was like 7 or 8.
Yeah.
And I was doing homework, and I had my lights on in my bedroom, and I kept hearing that pacing going back and forth. And I was like, is Nui coming back here? Like, I was sitting there, I was expecting the dog to come back there. Yeah. That's what I was hearing. Only time anything illuminated like it did. That whole hallway, I remember looking up finally after like the second or third time hearing it, and I was doing math, green, like a bright green, like Ghostbusters, like Slimer
neon.
Green,
yeah.
Like it was green, and I remember like I kind of froze sitting there like, am I, like, and I'm sixth grade. And I start screaming, like, ah, you know, and then I hear my mom hit the floor, and my dad, they're running, and you can hear them, and they're coming downstairs, and then my mom comes around the corner, and everything comes to my bedroom, and I'm, like, frozen, shaking, and everything. I'm like, it was green! The hallway was green! And my mom's like, green's a pretty color!
It could be so much worse!
I didn't know what was going on. I didn't see anything. I just know the hallway was green, by golly. And she's like, green's a pretty color. A month later, we put a house up for sale. So my mom and dad admit now, when I got a senior in high school, they kept telling me I was dreaming and I had a nap. I'm like, come on, man. I was sitting there doing homework. It was 7 o'clock or so in the evening. It wasn't like anything like... This was like probably around my birthday too. It was like February or March.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like I always watched, America's Funniest Home Videos.
Yeah.
I would watch an episode of that. And then after that, I knew it was bedtime. That didn't even come on yet. Like, I knew I was awake, you know, like you were asleep. You were taking a nap. And I'm like, no wonder I have some kind of issues.
Just a minor life-changing event. It's fine.
Yeah. So, but my dad told me my senior year in high school, which also, too, I don't know what this year means to him. I might need to talk to him about it now because it's come up so much. That's the only year he talked to us about Vietnam because he was in Vietnam. He had suffered a lot of PTSD. He was a Screaming Eagle of 101st. And didn't even know this until about 5 years ago. And like, they make videos and stuff about his troop and everything coming out of the, so, you know, I don't know what it was, but my senior in high school, he told us everything. So he saw it. My mom saw it. And by the time my dad said, by the time they hit that hallway, cause they could see the green coming out from the stairs, like, coming out, it's kind of like a poltergeist experience, you know, like Carol Ann. By the time they hit like almost that bottom step, that it went away, it like whoop, My mom's like, green's a pretty color.
It's Christmas. No, yeah. No, it's not. No, what is happening right now is I am being haunted.
Yes. Yes, most definitely.
It's more like Krampus than it is like Christmas.
And really quick, too, this is something interesting, too. I would hear this when I was downstairs in my basement. You would hear a big, huge metal pipe, like, hit the ground, and it would shake the ground, and you'd hear it, and then it would hit the wall, which my bedroom was, and it would shake that whole wall. My dad said that was happening before he even ever met my mom, before I was even ever thought about being, like, he had that house 5 years before he met my mom. He would hear that. He would hear voices in the house, my bedroom. He would sleep in my brother's bedroom because it was on the first floor, and that was the first floor there, first bedroom. My bedroom door would slam shut all the time. People would say that they would come over and they would party and stuff with my dad, and they would hear voices and people like walking upstairs and stuff.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was super haunted. Poltergeist activity, and it followed us to our new house. And if you want to go into that, we will, but I know we're short on time and I talk a lot.
You're good. So you mentioned a couple of minutes ago sleepwalking.
Yes.
So talk to me a bit about your experiences with that.
The only time I'm aware of was when that I sleptwalk was in this house. And I was young. And they were waking me up. And I think I vaguely remember waking up. And I remember like having like kind of like a seizure activity a little bit. Like, I remember being in the upstairs hallway and stuff. My dad, like, and I remember my hands shaking and my legs shaking and stuff. But Dr. Potter was a pediatrician, and I was sleepwalking, and he said a lot of times that children have very vivid dreams, like cartoons, like you can't. And this is why I always believe a child way more than an adult. And this is, I'm kind of doing a study and writing a book. I haven't made that announcement yet, but with children and actually having their drawings of the things that they see in this book.
Interesting.
Yeah, they can't distinguish between what's reality and non-reality. Like, I thought the Jetsons was literally a place to go to, and I wanted to fly in one of the cars and everything. Like, I really thought, having a master's in elementary education, my mom teaching elementary education for a very, very long time, and trying to correlate and put all this together, no wonder spirits or children are more sensitive than adults, because we get older, we block all that stuff out. But the ones that really truly experience it as a child, I think they have a hard time blocking that out, even though my parents themselves try to make me block it out to make me feel better. But I'm like, I know this happens. So you have to block it out yourself. Like, I prayed against it. I'm like, I don't want this. Please don't let me see this. I can't handle this at this time. So, anyway, going a little bit back to what we were talking about. What were we talking about?
Sleepwalking.
I remember hitting the lights. Okay.
Yeah.
They took me to the pediatrician. I remember talking to Dr. Potter about it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I feel like I'm dreaming and things like that. Well, he tells my parents, don't wake me up. Don't wake me up. Just follow me.
Yeah.
So my dad, we did it. Gosh, I can't really even remember how many times that they did this. But when I would sleepwalk, I would go and turn on every light in the house, even go to the basement and turn on the lights in the house. My dad would follow me, turn the lights off, and then make sure I get back to the bedroom. He didn't wake me up, but he said he kind of started guiding me back, because I would do the same circulation over and over. But if he learned that if he guided me back to, which was actually upstairs in the computer room, because I hardly slept downstairs in my bed, because that's how he woke up. You know, he would wake up, he's a very light sleeper, he was in the military, that I would start with the bathroom light upstairs, there by their bedroom, and that's what would wake him up. And then I would go down. I would go down the steps, turn on all the lights in the bedrooms, bathrooms, all that stuff. He'd go right behind me, turn them off, go back down in the basement, come back up. Didn't turn on any lights coming back up after the basement because they're already on. And I didn't know that he had turned them off, and then he'd direct me right back to bed. Only time I slept walk was in that house.
What it sounds like is that it sounds like even in your subconscious, you recognize the haunting and were turning the lights on as almost a way to, as a child, you know, fight against the darkness, because that's where a lot of the stuff would happen. That's what it sounds like.
Probably so. And I'll tell you one time, though, that I had a flashback, and it was during the Conjuring movie where she's there with the light, the candle, and I hear candles. I always still to this day have to have lights on and things burning. But when she came in the Conjuring movie, the first one, and she's there with the candle and the slap behind her. Like, I don't know if that ever happened to me or something, but something triggered. Like, I was bawling, crying in the theater, like, twice over that movie. But the first, during the movie, was the clap. Like, I don't know. It felt like it triggered something there that, and I didn't dabble with that much at all. But our house was definitely poltergeist activity and haunted. My dad thinks of what it could be. And then it followed us to the house that we built. And the first night we were all together under the house for the first time, my bedroom was up on top of the garage. Okay. And we had about 80 or 90 paint cans. It was like a 5,000 square foot home. And we had 80, 90 paint cans in the garage. The cars were parked outside because of so many paint cans. We just finished painting the interior of the house, and it was the first time the whole family was underneath there. And we all woke up, we heard bang, 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 bang. My dad has his guns out and everything, like he's like, somebody's in this house. And it was in the garage, like it was underneath my bedroom. And we go down there thinking that all the paint, we're thinking all the paint cans were knocked over, something happened. We open up, nothing in the whole place. And they didn't tell us anything, but we go to Christ Temple Church in Huntington, West Virginia, Pastor Chuck Lawrence and Pastor Mays. Pastor Mays was he's a professor at Marshall University. He was one of my professors in Bible college. Amazing people, still go there to this day, 20 some years later. And they came down and prayed over our house, anointed the doors and windows and all that stuff. And we never had a problem since.
That's interesting. So, it's crazy that A, it followed you, and B, some of that was like the deep formative years of your life.
Yes.
And it makes me wonder if what accelerated what happened and caused it to attach is a potential PK agent. Like, I don't know.
Well, if you look up poltergeist activity in houses, they mostly affect girls.
Yeah.
They definitely come out during the like the puberty ages and stuff too, and that's when we moved.
Yeah.
I think that house, I know the people that live there now. Oh my gosh, I'm getting goosebumps about it. I know them. They say that they haven't had anything happen there. They go to church. They're church-filled people. My dad thinks it was the old lady that lived in that house, because she would always sit in this rocker, which is kind of funny because one of my brother's best friends, his name was Justin, came and spent the night with us when we were in elementary school, and he thought he saw me, because from my brother's bedroom door you could see the hallway going into that open area there, and he thought he saw me get up to go get something to drink in the kitchen. And he's like, oh, Emily's up, I'm gonna get something to drink, because he's super thirsty and he didn't want to wake up my brother. And he gets up and he goes out there and he sees a lady sitting in the chair next to the window. My dad kept that chair there, not her chair, but a chair that we had next to the window. He couldn't ever keep that window warm or that area warm. He put layers and layers of plastic up in the wintertime to keep that area warm over the window. Yeah. And then he realized it wasn't, like, it went away. It freaked him out so bad that he woke up my brother. We had to call his parents at 2 o'clock in the morning. He never spent the night again.
Wow. So there may have been layers to it then. It may have not just been a poltergeist. It sounds like there was some residual there.
Yeah, she passed away. It was an old woman. She was widowed. Her husband didn't pass away in the house, but she passed away in the house, and her bedroom was my bedroom.
That's not creepy.
Oh, don't even get me started on Bloody Mary. Oh, I did Bloody Mary in that house. And nope. Then...
Mm-mm. No thanks.
And I'll tell you something that's really weird. Too, that happened one night. I kept thinking it was an earthquake at a young age. I had the dresser drawers where you would, they were brass, like, knobs mm-hmm. that you would flick up. I've never really talked about this on any show.
Okay. Well,
so,
exclusive.
Yes, exclusive right here. Hell, it's 2020. Let's just, what else is going to happen? Let's just talk about it. So, I had these brass handles. And it had like a little brass background, like calligraphy, or I don't know what you would call it, like a little design. And then it would flick up and go down, like these handles flick up and go down. So I remember laying there one night in bed, one of the very few nights I was laying there. I always had the covers over my head. I'm laying there. I hear ding, 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 ding. And I'm like, I thought mom was in there trying to get my clothes out of my dresser for the school for the next day. Yeah. I look up the dresser with the mirror and the chest of drawers, everything started ding, 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 ding. Boom. I was out. I think that was the last night I really, truly stayed in that room.
Like, mildly unsettling.
Yeah. And then my parents told me it was an earthquake.
Right. Okay. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. I also had a mom too that was a very avid Stephen King ringer, and I kind of blame this stuff on her too, because she used to sing to me, Tommy knockers, no. Knocking at the door. Don't know if I should answer it. Don't know if I can. I'm so afraid of the Tommy knocker man. That's what my mom used to say to me at night time.
No.
So,
no.
No wonder. No wonder.
No. I mean, I could get started on Tommy knockers, but that would take an hour and a half, and you know, don't get me started. So over the years of doing your investigations, doing your shows, talking with people, what are some of your best takeaways? What are some of the best things that you've learned while doing this?
One of the best things I ever learned. When you ask a ghost to do something, please expect the ghost to do it. Don't sit there and think it's not going to happen. You see a shadow person, you say, oh, I see that shadow guy over there. Why don't you stand up? And then the shadow figure stands up. Don't you freak out because you asked it to do it.
Exactly.
You need to expect it to happen. Because, like, I remember, like, I was being smart, but... at one of these events that I held at the Seton Manor here in Ashland, and I'm like, I had never really seen anything happen, and I was like, why don't you just knock over that chair, which was a chair. Here's something else I learned. I think that infrared cameras and things like that affect ghosts, because all these times that you capture stuff, the cameras are off. They know.
It's intriguing. Yeah.
When that's on, there's something there.
I can kind of agree with that. But yeah, well, I'll probably talk about that in another episode. But yes, so, continue.
Well, I remember saying, well, you know, these people are wanting something to move. And I'm like, this, nothing ever happens like moving there. Now, it's a classic haunting. If you want to see shadow figures, apparitions, you want to see hear class A EVPs.
Holy grail.
You got it there. But yeah. As in poltergeist stuff moving. Now, there was a table down in the basement. There was six chairs, and then there was the seventh chair there that was about 3 or 4 feet away from the table. Mm-hmm. And so they're like, we've been here a couple times, and they've never moved anything. This place is whatever. So, you know, so I sit there and I said, okay, I said, what was her name? Not Margaret. Yeah, Margaret. Margaret. I said, Margaret, just ask it with everything you got in your heart. Just say, move that chair over there. So she's like, I've been here 3 times and you haven't done anything. Move that chair. And we don't have the cameras on.
Of course not.
Why would you? Because we're on break. Okay? And we videotaped the bedrooms. These people spent the night there. And we had dinner and we had breakfast and everything. It was a really nice event. Mm-hmm. So we would turn the cameras off when we went on break. And a group didn't want to go on break, so we went. So she says it. I'm not joking. Like, I'm at the table like this. My head down. Nobody can see that. I'm sorry. I have my head down. Used to do a video. I have my head down. I'm like, okay, she said it. She said it bold. And then Tracy, he was on the side with me, which was an investigator, too, that would help me out. And we've done this plenty of times. And then Martha, not Margaret. I'm sorry. Martha. And then there was like 3 or 4 feet in the chair. And then there was 3 other people on the other side. So I was like sitting there and she said it. All of a sudden, you hear, feel this wind come in. You hear Tracy go, because he saw something. He didn't have his head down out of the corner of his eye, like a white thing that went past, like behind us. I felt a poke like in the middle of my back, like right in the middle of my back. And then Martha said that she felt her hair go up like somebody moved it, and then that chair knocked over. I was screaming too. What? Like, I'm not gonna lie. Because
the ultimate attention grab.
I know. Like, we have it on audio recording. And the doctor that owns the house will not let me put it out for public.
Of course not.
And it wasn't on. It wasn't on video. I know. That was the most intense paranormal experience I had in my adult years, not at a house like I lived in or anything like that. But that was the most craziness I had there. I've had another experience that was truly crazy. Best probably 2 to 3 minutes of paranormal activity I've ever had in Ohio last year. But she said it firm, man. And like you felt. It was like feeling, and he was seeing. I felt it. She felt it. And then that chair went boom, knocked over.
That's crazy. Yeah. That's crazy. I love stuff like that. But it is just absolutely heartbreaking that it's happening when there's no video rolling.
I think that's when it mostly happens. I think that IR and cameras or something there in that field affects them.
I can kind of agree with that. I wouldn't say necessarily that it affects them much as I would say they don't want to be seen. And the only reason I say that is because I've seen several instances, and I'm sure we all have, where, you know, something will get drained of battery, but what's being drained of battery most often is the camera. Because they don't want to be seen. I was on a battleship. My investigation on the USS North Carolina 2-3 weeks ago, and the lady that I went with, she had her phone plugged up to a power bank, and it didn't just drain her phone. What it did was it switched the flow of current and took the power from the phone and put it back into the battery pack, and then her phone shuts off. And then when we were in the bowels of the ship, you know, I was filming something and it turned off the filming and deleted the video out of my phone.
Oh, that happens all the time. I have so much lost footage and lost audio. Yes. It's crazy. The Stanley Hotel was the major one that had a lot of lost audio. I caught my whole years of doing this. I've caught 3 things on camera, and F.O. Stanley, I got him on camera. Oh, wow. And it was on display at the Stanley Hotel. The last time I was there was in 2015. It was still on display, so I don't know if it's still there or not. Since 2015. I need to go back up there, but I got him in a mirror, and I'll send it to you. I'll show it to you on Instagram. And let you see it. When they put the statue out finally out front there, what was that, 2 years ago or so? Wait till you see the picture I got.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's something that, you know, running a camera is good. to kind of be able to video document, you know, K2s going off and things like that. But when it comes to catching video evidence, it's rare. It is rare that you actually see a full-bodied apparition on video. Why? Because they don't want to be seen. When you catch them is when you're not directly looking at them, when you're moving the camera. That is most of it happening. When your camera is static, that is where you see the effects, but not itself. I would say it's you know, it may be that affects them and makes them not seen, but it could also be, I don't want you to see me.
It's probably true, because you got to think about some of the places that you're going to. You're going through, like, a lot of the places I've dealt, and I'm drawn to this era in time, the Gilded America, and post-Civil War, the Reconstruction period, and, you know, during that time frame, the Industrial Revolution and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So, you know, 1876 up to probably, like, 1902, 1903. That's the realm I'm drawn to, and that's the Stanley Hotel. That was the Seton Manor. Yeah. That was Malabar Farm, too, the Seely Rose house, which I had a major 2 to 3 minute. I have that up on SoundCloud, and I'll send that to you, too. The greatest... Now, I didn't get it on video because my GoPro I had was fully charged. And this is the first time I ever seen this ever happen. When this was started going, it looked like a static television. You can hear me talking about it, and had somebody else come over and look at it, you can hear a ghost say, "It's okay." Like, it's what? And then it comes out clear really quickly. Hold on, I'll just say this really fast. Comes out clear really quickly. I see a light anomaly there. This is during the daytime. I see a light anomaly come in and flash. It says, and this is the only time I ever captured this. You hear all the TV shows say it over and over. It's the only time I ever captured this on audio. Demon. Okay? So, it's static. Then it flashes out. I see a light anomaly. I said, there's a light anomaly. It's all on audio. And it says demon. And then it starts static, and this guy comes over, looks at it, and then you hear a voice says, "It's okay." Then the person I was doing a paranormal investigation with, he had a proximity meter that was that could go through doorways and stuff. So anyway, you hear him, he says, "I'm going to take this up to Seely Rose's room, go up there and put it in her room and see if she can go up there." So he goes up there, you hear him go up there, he comes back down, and I have all this on audio. And he says, "Seely, can you go up to your room and just get around that little device I put in the middle of it?" She goes, I can't. And I swear, it's the best 2 minutes, maybe 3 minutes of EVP, paranormal, intelligent responses. Like, that house affected me. And let me tell you, I started looking up Seely Rose. She poisoned her whole family and killed them all. Her birthday is my birthday.
Not creepy.
the proximity meter started going off. It went, ding, you could hear it. And we were all downstairs.
So there was a connection. There was a connection. And that's why she was willing to do all that.
Got so much. And that's something I started doing, too, a couple years ago, like all these haunted places. And I know that there's a lot of outside influences during the day. That's why we investigate at night. But if a place is truly haunted, man, it's haunted 24/7. I started doing surprise attacks.
When it wants to.
Yeah. Started doing surprise attacks on people. Show up in the middle of the day at a restaurant and everything. I don't care if you know me or not. I heard this place is haunted. Can I do an EVP session really quickly? And you get the people there sitting. They love it.
Yeah.
Everybody gets involved. That's crazy.
That's so good, though.
I might
end
up doing that on YouTube in 2021.
Do it. Freaking do it.
Yeah. Freaking. What the frick, man? Do it.
So, as we are wrapping this up, give us all of your social medias so that people can go out there and they can find you.
Okay. Whew. Well, I have a website that's down right now. Getting ready to upgrade it and come out with a new website. So I'm not going to give that out right now. So on Facebook, it's facebook.com/WTFrick. Mm-hmm. What the frick? WTFrick Live Podcast. We are on the PUN Network, which is the Paranormal United Network. Top all that out on Facebook. We're on there every Friday night at 9 p.m. Will Martinez is my co-host. As in the I founded Error 404 Paranormal Network, which is new actually. I had some things go on this past year with a significant person I was with and dropped out and changed things over. And how I got Error 404 was I was actually talking to the director of my Florida, and I was trying to get into this website and kept saying Error 404. I'm not joking. Adele came on at that time. Says, "Hello, it's me." And I'm like, "Error." I said, "Error 404. Hello from the other side."
That's great, though.
That's how that came about. And so we have Error 404 Paranormal on Facebook, and that's the website that's going to be coming out here hopefully by 2021 in January. I have my Kentucky team, which is Error 606 Paranormal. All this spell out Error then 606 Paranormal. I have Error 614 Columbus. I have Error 419 Toledo. I have Error 352 Chiefland, Florida. I have Error 434 Lynchburg, Virginia. And then I have Error 575 Taos, New Mexico.
Wow. So you're directing quite a bit of squads out there.
Yes, and we're about ready to bring three more teams on, too. And it's grown big time since June, and I didn't expect this. And every person on my team and all the directors, we're having a directors meeting next Wednesday, and this Wednesday, I'm sorry. I love them very much. Some of them I didn't even know. Now we're best friends, and it's all grown. We have several different TV or podcasts. I have mine, and then Melissa Grubbs is part of the network. She has 434. Mm-hmm. She has Parachat on RU Media, and then I have Bill Davis. That's 352. That's Chiefland, Florida. He's in with Justin Brown on his show every week. He's a co-host. And then I have Valerie Wright. That is Error 575. That's New Mexico. She has her Gemstones and Metaphysical shows two times a week. She sells things, and she's super talented and awesome, amazing. Everybody is great.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
So guys, while you're out there and you're checking out Emily and everything that she's doing, I say it every week, and I mean it every week from the bottom of my heart. Whenever you find somebody in the paranormal community, no matter how big, no matter how small, make sure you show that love and support. Like, comment, subscribe, follow, whatever. Give that love, give that support. We're all out here for the same purpose, and that is to find answers. And with that being said, guys, we'll talk to you next time on Sparks of the Paranormal.